Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World episode 110. And I'm very pleased to have back Jesse from Splinterlands. How's it going, Jesse?
It's fantastic. How are things?
Yeah. We're just looking. I think it's the third time you've been on, but you've not been on for a couple of years. So I've been failing in my Splinterlands devotion over that period of time because you've had an awful lot of stuff going on. So we've got plenty to be talking about. We won't go through the usual thing of you giving your potted history. People want to find that. We've done previous kind of podcasts, so we won't go through all that. Quite a lot to talk about. But one thing I did sort of want to talk about, and I think it's pretty much for a year now, Splinterlands has been the most popular blockchain game in terms of on-chain activity. So you're doing about 350,000 daily active unique wallets, and that's pretty sustained and bigger than anything else. And I just kind of wonder, this is a sort of a curveball to throw you for the first question, but do you feel like Splinterlands gets the recognition it deserves? Because I sort of feel like it sort of never has, and I don't know why that's the case, and I wonder if you could, you know, I mean, you're probably much more personal to it and maybe a bit more sensitive to it, I don't know, but why do you think that's the case?
You know, honestly, I don't know. My guess is that it's because we're not built on Ethereum. You know, like a lot of the crypto bros are built on Ethereum, and so, you know, that's where the biggest audience is, and we're not. So I think it could be hard to generate hype for projects that aren't, you know, the market leading projects. It's not like a Lightning Network thing, it's not an Ethereum thing, and it's not something hot like Solana. So, you know, we're built on a chain that, like, you know, it's kind of, I know Hive is like a new fork, but Steemit is a blockchain, and Steemit was like around back in 2016. So it didn't have hype and excitement and craziness. Then it forked off in the Hive and it was exciting around then. But, you know, a lot of that excitement has died off, and now it's, you know, just back at Project 177 or something. So it's hard to get a lot of attention built on these side chains, but, you know, I don't worry about it too much on the day-to-day. Yet the next piece for me is really like, we started working with larger brands. One of the ones that we've announced is a Warner Music, but there's also some sports leagues that we'll be working with. So in the not too distant future, I'm hoping really Q3, we're going to be rolling out other games, and those should have some pretty big brand names associated with them. And I think that'll make more of a splash than some of the stuff that we've done in the past. You know, you see like a national sports league, and I don't know, you might pay attention a little bit more.
But it just, I mean, not to sort of over sort of egg the point, it always seemed really weird to me that, you know, Splinterlands, when I first started playing, you know, kind of start of 2020, was, you know, back then the easiest game to start playing. So it's sort of free to play, just put in your password, you know, email password. You're not playing on the blockchain bit. You pay $10 to upgrade your account to have the blockchain bit if you want to do that. It's very sort of simple sort of onboarding. Couldn't imagine anything sort of simpler. And then you sort of play the game, and it's for me, it's like what I imagined a blockchain game to be. You know, everything, you have cards, you play games against other people. Someone wins, someone gets rewards. Everything's sort of on the blockchain, the cards. You can buy, you know, you get like this free sort of starter set that aren't NFTs, but you can basically buy cards. You can rent cards. The cards are limited editions. I mean, there's now two, you know, in-game cryptocurrencies. You've got land coming up. You've got all the things you would want. And it's sort of, I don't know, I sort of struggle to, I can't think why. I mean, obviously, you're the most popular blockchain game, but it sort of seems weird.
It's still a little quiet. Yeah.
I know.
No, I get it.
but at some point, it's kind of like, well, this is, you know, it just is. What more could you want? But anyway, let's talk about, because the other thing you've been doing.
The short answer is we're better developers than we are anything else.
Yes, no.
You know, like doing marketing, fundraising, doing every single part of this, you know, our focus is really on let's go build the coolest game. And as long as we are getting people in and sharing that story, you know, we'll continue to grow. But, you know, some of these guys, when they're not cautious around how quickly they grow, they'll just smash, right? Like, you know, we experienced a 50x growth and it took 6 months to go deal with it. Like just all the servers, you know, our game runs on 45 servers. So you got to like upgrade every single one of them as it hits a new, you know, transaction maximum. You know, it's not like it's limited by the blockchain in that sense, but it's just like how much time we put into the code base to make that one server function and do its job. It was great. And then you 50x it in like, you know, a month, and suddenly there's a lot more strain. So a lot of this has been like initially just going gangbusters wouldn't actually have been helpful for the game. When we did go gangbusters, it certainly taught us a lot. But some of that too is still around like, there's certainly a lot of like money and trading in crypto, but there's still not tons and tons of like consumer facing dApps. They're actually really hard to build. So, there has to be more of like a whole ecosystem around this in ways that there haven't been. And for things that have been, that a lot of them have been scams, rug pulls, flops, and for one Bored Ape Yacht Club that does really well as a PFP, there's what, like 10,000 that earn some artist money but have lost value over time. Like it's a funky space and hard to build in, and there's so many different things happening that it's also really hard to just grab attention. So we're growing, we're building, and we keep putting out new features and growing the player base, but they're it's a challenge.
Let's dig into a little bit of what you're doing, because you say you have really been sort of ferociously building, and certainly since I last had you on the podcast. I mean, one thing that you've sort of just put out fairly recently is you're sort of tweaking your reward structure, and as I've mentioned, basically you pay $10 to upgrade your account to the blockchain sort of version of the game, and then you can start earning rewards depending on battles, and you sort of tweaked it. So the people who are using these free NFTs basically get fewer rewards, and people who are actually going out and buying sort of card sets and actually putting money into the economy, the reward balance has sort of shifted more towards those people who are, feeding the economy. So you did, it's quite a long sort of blog post you've put in about that, and all the sort of, there's some maths in there as well, and you clearly sort of thought about any change to a game sort of alienate some people and sort of pleases others. So, how easy was it to go through that sort of process? Because Axie Infinity's been doing similar sort of things, and it seems to me a lot of blockchain games are sort of now sort of refocusing, where their rewards go, and really focusing on the people who are going to be skilled in the game, and that's really where the sort of the sweet spot is, which wasn't the situation like a year ago.
Yeah, I mean, we knew we needed to go do this for a while, but like we narrowed it down to you really have to own assets in the game to be rewarded. And then and we had like a lot of gameplay would reward you, but we really wanted it more of like proof of victory, that it wasn't just winning some, but it's really like your win rate and your overall success. And so we worked with the community a lot to go figure this out and figure out what's a good balance. And honestly, in a lot of ways, I feel like we nailed it. The overall, even though we have done a substantial growth in rewards to individual players, we have seen an overall decline in the amount of rewards that we're giving out. So, when we had that surge, a lot of it, not all of it, but a bunch of it was bots. And Splinterlands has a different approach to bots than most of these other things. Like whether it's Web 2 or Web 3, everybody's like, bots are bad, ban them, fight them, whatever. And it's like playing whack-a-mole. You'll never actually be done with that. And so our strategy is really around like, there's a using a bot as a tool. That tool can be a force multiplier for whales, where one whale might only want one account, but if they can bot, they might come in for 10 or 20 or whatever. So there's opportunities to that make this make sense. The challenge is making sure that they're not leeching, which a lot of bots and a lot of communities are simply vampiric. And in this case, by shifting the rewards from low level menial work in the game of completing some quests and getting some rewards to really like, you have to rank up, you have to be performing well, you have to be getting a lot of victory. That's how you actually earn in the game. We've seen that it's exciting our player base. We're seeing more humans come in. We're seeing fewer bots, but I don't know that they're gone. Like they're probably just retooling right now. But that's all part of what we're trying to work on is figure out how do we give out an appropriate amount of rewards so that it's sustainable and acts like marketing to drive people in. But not give out so much that it's just stupid and inflationary. And how do we make sure that they're going to accounts that are providing value to the whole ecosystem? And it's tricky, but I feel like we nailed it because that's the anecdotal evidence we're hearing. The rewards have moved from, you know, DEC is one of the rewards, and it has a set pool. So, you know, it because that pool is fixed, we watched it go from sort of lower levels to higher levels, which is where we want to be seeing it. You know, there's not everybody's in champion, so I'm not expecting 100% of the rewards to go to the champions, but, you know, I'm expecting a distribution, and it moved significantly multiple tiers up, which is, you know, the kind of evidence that we're looking for, that it's going in the right direction. And like I said, overall, even though like in champion, we 50x'd the amount of rewards that a player got, it's still deflationary. That to me is amazing. Like we really took out a lot of waste and a lot of vampiric, low energy, low efficiency bots. And not that they're gone and not that they can't play. They're just under the same restrictions everybody else is, that you have to win and you have to have a nice collection and rank up. And I think that that's gone really well for the players and for the ecosystem.
Mm. I mean, yeah, if you're sort of forcing bot accounts to spend money to buy cards, then that's sort of good for everyone, isn't it? Or the other thing that I think you guys have been, were, you know, still are quite, you know, ahead of the curve on is your rental system. So, you know, people can buy cards, use them in their own games, or if they're not using them, and I guess if they're particularly sort of high-end cards, they can rent those out to people. So you have this whole kind of rental system, which you know, it didn't strike me as being as innovative, perhaps, as it does now when I first started playing the game. But it's sort of is this other sort of monetization layer. It's like a passive income for people, and it makes sense for people to, you know, be buying some of these high-end cards as an investment and then renting them out and not using them themselves. And that's a bit, in a way, that's sort of creating a deeper ecosystem than just sort of like having a scholarship program.
And it also makes it affordable. You know, like not everybody has the capital to go sink into $100 cards or $1,000 cards or $10,000 cards. So for those that have it, own it, can sit on it, it's providing opportunity for other people to actually participate, use meaningful cards that would normally be well out of their price range and actually be able to use them in the game. So, yeah, I think the rental market is really one of the best parts of our game. And I think it's exciting. So, you know, we have anywhere from like 1 to 3 million cards rented on a given day. Like that's not insignificant. That's a huge chunk of cards.
And it does also, because I don't know how many cards you have. You've had, you know, 4 years of releasing cards. There's sort of a lot out there, but it does also give that, you know, players an ability to sort of, you know, people have their, you know, whatever the meta is, people have their own styles, and it gives people the opportunity to go, would that card actually work for me, sort of thing. You know, you can rent it out for maybe the cheapest ones are just a couple of cents, aren't they, and rent them out for a day. So it allows you to have that sort of, you know, the sort of way of sort of building a deck without, you know, spending without buying up front. And I guess the other thing you've done really well, and again, I don't think I realised the significance of this, and I kind of wonder if you think this is as significant as it could be, even now, is the tournament structure. So you have a tournament structure, anyone can set up sort of tournaments with you know, rule sets and all that sort of stuff. And again, we've seen some companies try to build entire platforms and raise tens of millions of dollars to build blockchain esports platforms, and you sort of have that inherent into Splinterlands. I mean, do you think that can be get more attention? I mean, I think you've done $6 million of rewards. We've gone through that.
No, just shy. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, Hearthstone, which is sort of like a holy grail company for us. You know, they certainly pushed the envelope on what trading cards do and how you play and active users and all that. Like, they don't have a tournament system. You know, we're pretty advanced for, especially since it's blockchain and everything's harder to build on blockchain. So, you know, our general thesis is like, develop something awesome. People will continue to climb on board and come into this ecosystem, invent some of the coolest opportunities. And I think the scaling really comes when we integrate these brands, whether it's music and entertainment or whether it's sports and athletes. You know, when we go from a bunch of random wizards and orcs in our game to, you know, here are some of the hottest celebrities in the world, I think that's where that kind of like hype and wow factor comes from. And it's all going to use that kind of like baseline pieces from Splinterlands to get us there.
Cool. Okay. I have a few more questions about Splinterlands, then maybe we'll talk generally about sort of where you think this sort of stuff's going. I know stuff hasn't been, a lot of stuff hasn't been announced yet, but another sort of big change you've done is this sort of validator node stuff. So you basically, they're not live yet, but you allowed people to buy basically a validator node license. So basically they're sort of going to start operating some of the infrastructure that Splinterlands will run on. So what's the thinking around that? Obviously you've been running the game for how many years, just, you know, on the Hive blockchain, so that's its own sort of blockchain, and people have been running that. So why are you having, what's the point of having a validator node structure for Splinterlands, and you know, where does that lead on to, I suppose?
Yeah, the goal is to decentralize everything, right? Like, from the token ecosystem to the gameplay to the game itself, like, decentralize all of it. You know, some of that is regulatory, some of that is security, some of that is just like, you know, this is the dream of like the community gets to own these things. So that's the pathway that we're going down. And the most obvious place to start is with all the tokens, you know, any packs, cards, NFTs, fungibles, the dark energy crystals, stable coin, the Splinter Shard governance token. It doesn't, all of it needs to get in there eventually. So we're gonna start with Splinter Shards or governance token. Along with that is vouchers, which represent a reward you get for staking SPS, which we kind of look at as like a stake days kind of reward mechanism. And all of that is really what goes into, you know, what we want to decentralize first, and then we'll keep adding more pieces to what validators do and how players interact with them.
What's the sort of, so for someone like me who's like totally untechnical, what, you know, is the validator node something that I should be sort of thinking about, or is it, you know, you're going to have like serviced accounts, or is this, this is for the IT specialists who are running their own Linux sort of services?
It's a little bit of all of that. I mean, at the base, you know, so we're on Hive, and Hive has, you know, a blockchain, and to operate the blockchain, you know, you have kind of Hive D, and you would run Hive D, and to do that, you rent out like a virtual private server, you download the software to it, you configure it with your details, and you get it up and running. At the low end of running something like a witness or a block producer, that's pretty simple. If you're running like a full RPC node, that actually starts getting fairly complicated in terms of all the requirements of it. So that's kind of what we're used to in this ecosystem of, you know, so I think there'll be some similarities where, you know, you come in, you'll, the software that you download will be in a Docker container, and, you know, Docker makes a lot of this stuff easy. It turns it from like, you know, real code into like run X and stop X, you know, it's not, this isn't rocket science. This is people that are, you know, if you're literate and can type and know how to do some type of connection to like a virtual private server, then you should be fine. You know, so I'm sometimes a boomer in terms of like what technology I'm familiar with and what I can do, and I can run these things. So, I don't know. You don't have to be a dev. You can't. You know, it takes a little bit of work, but, you know, we're going to have tutorials that will walk you through it. And as long as you can kind of read something technical and follow along, you know, our hope is that basically anybody that has enough willpower will get through this.
And I guess sort of the other big thing, feature, I suppose, for Splinterlands is the land NFTs, which I guess have been, I can't remember when that was, about a year, probably a year ago. Yep. They started to go live. You sold out very quickly through various sort of tiers. And sort of where are we with that? I guess lots of games, again, going through sort of similar processes, have land in there. And then there's the sort of case of sort of building out, and a lot of sort of deeper meta features sort of come with the land. So I imagine that's the thing that the community are probably, the general community are most sort of focused on.
Yep. So back in February, we reorged our team, and we built out, you know, a handful of different developer-led product teams that were building software. And some of the projects that they had were of overlapping size, and they kind of ended like big parts of their project at very similar spots. So the rank rewards team finished first. We got that live. We got validator node pre-sales out, and they're kind of in their like testnet phase, but we should hopefully be starting before too long. We're gonna have modern versus wild, which are kind of like fighting formats. And one of the next kind of big ones to come out will be a non-card market. And so right now, you know, the only market that we have functioning on the site is your DEC based, card summoner and monster NFTs. But it kind of as a precursor to land, we're going to need like a whole other market that can service everything else that's in this game, particularly NFTs of the land variety, of which there's, many. So we look at the non-card market as sort of step one, or maybe even step zero, of getting land out, and that's in the hopper. I think that's Q3. Maybe it pushes into Q4, but the first sign of land is it's almost here.
Good. Okay, so let's leave Splinterlands. We've gone through that in some detail. Let's talk a little bit about the sort of the vision now for going forward. So Splinterlands, trading card based game, very fully featured, lots of stuff going on there, building out. So why is sort of sports and sort of celebrity with Warner Music, whatever you're doing there, why did you think that was sort of the next step when you thought, right, we got this, the first sort of game there, still working on it, still a bunch of stuff to come, but the next step up. That, to me, that seems, obviously I'm not a game developer, that seems a little bit different, sort of type of experience.
Yeah, so my working thesis goes something like, people are the value. The actual thing that backstops the value of crypto, of all things here, are people. They're people accepting it, people trading it, people using it, people playing with it, people getting entertainment. Like, people themselves are the value. And so what I want to do is get as many people into this ecosystem as possible from a business standpoint. From a personal standpoint, I happen to think that cryptocurrency is like the single most important tool of our lifetime, and that it can help spread peace, prosperity, and freedom. And so personally, I want to get as many people into this ecosystem so that they, those that aren't exposed to crypto or haven't used it before, really start getting a sense of, asset ownership, keys, private management, privacy, some parts that are public and transparent, but like, pseudo anonymity of your account. There's like a lot here that I think is really empowering to a human that experiences it. So what the sports have done is aggregate millions, if not hundreds of millions, of people as fans and watchers. And so to me, they represent, on a business case, it's an extraordinary financial opportunity. From an ecosystem, it's like a huge number of people that we can draw in to this. So, if I could keep launching games that are, fantasy related or made up IP or whatever, but and we, on a per card basis or a per pack basis, we'll make more money. But I think there's a real magic to brands and to, trusted partners and to famous athletes and people that you look up to, and integrating that into this, I think will grossly accelerate the number of people in our ecosystem, the amount of money in our ecosystem, and the number of transactions that happen within it.
Okay, that's a good starting thesis. I guess the next point on there is you guys are not the first to come up with this thesis. There's actually, to me, a surprising amount of sort of various types of sports games. Blockchain games companies are already, already sort of quite active in that space. So, how much of it do you think there is a sort of diminishing return thing potentially going on here? Sort of people are, it's so rare that did like I think the biggest game development sort of venture round ever. I can't remember what it was, $680 million or something, and they're trying to get the Premier League rights and all this sort of stuff. And as you say, that those brands can be are sort of fairly expensive. They sort of take like a proportion of your revenue. So do you sort of worry a bit that you're potentially getting into a bidding war with you know, sort of everyone's buying these licenses and basically not getting much of a competitive advantage because they're all basically buying the same, not the same license, but all sort of getting equivalent licenses. So I guess what you just mentioned was the broad thesis of why that's important for blockchain, but why? How did you leverage competitive advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a matter of scalability to what we're doing that nobody else in the blockchain world can touch. You know, we use, you know, our tech platform is basically build on the layer one and then really scale it with commercial grade Amazon servers. And, you know, that kind of approach and opportunity, I don't see very much, but you know, if you needed to ask, how can you deliver millions of transactions to millions of people? You know, Amazon Cloud is a pretty safe bet that you could do it that way. So, you know, at the end of the day, I think, you know, a lot of these projects that especially are built on Ethereum are going to run into severe scaling issues. And so, you know, some of them are going to do a phenomenal job of taking a lot of money from like a handful of Ethereum whales, and they'll make tons. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, that's a very profitable business, and we want to run a profitable business. But part of what we want to do is bring in the like masses into crypto. And I think our games and the opportunity here of like start up with an email and a password, swipe a credit card to get your first packs, you know, cards that can be in the pennies that you can rent for fractions of a cent. Like this to me is a way that you're going to onboard masses of people in ways that some of these other projects I don't think can or will. And I'd love to be proven wrong, because ultimately there's enough room in the space for everybody. But those are some of my working hypotheses around like how we're going to build and where are people going to come from and how are we going to make progress in here. And I think scaling and scalability is by far the number one issue. So, and then, you know, the gameplay is pretty different. You know, I think that there's different types of game and different ways to play these things. And, you know, I think we keep hearing Splinterlands is engaging and addictive and awesome. And, you know, a lot of people like playing this thing. It's a little more on the complicated side because it's, you know, wizards and orcs and all these special abilities and you got to know them. And that's part of the challenge, but there's some, you know, I think when we get into something like soccer, where, you know, we're not like totally reinventing or like inventing a game from scratch. You know, somebody comes in and they know what a forward is. They know what a goalie is. You know, we don't have to like teach them this thing. They'll be familiar with the players. So they might already have a rank of like, who's the best and why should they play in different roles? Like some of the stuff that's hard in Splinterlands, I think it's, you know, easier overnight just because it's in this world that people are familiar with.
I think you're absolutely right, particularly in terms of like the fantasy sports stuff, that people already have like a working knowledge of how the stuff works, but also they have their personal sort of biased sort of knowledge about whether it's the teams they like or whether they think this guy's underrated, or you know, and that's actually, you know, an incredibly sort of powerful sort of starting point. And I guess the other advantage you guys have is you've been running the most popular blockchain game for the last however many sort of years. So that's when it comes to the sort of the scaling side of things, that sort of plays into that. So obviously there's, you know, a bunch of stuff you sort of announced on the broad sort of scope of what you're doing. When should we be expecting more specific sort of announcements? You know, is that like 6 months off, or is that we should be expecting a bit sooner?
I'm hoping that some of these sport things are in Q3 of this year. So we're, you know, that's not that far away. And arguably we're in it. So sometime in the next couple months here, we should be live, and we'll have announcements about kind of what's the overall league, what's the overall plan, who are the starting participants, who's coming in, and what shape will it take? What types of games are there? What leagues are going to be in this? How does the ecosystem work? You know, we're building out those plans. We're building out those websites. We have signed deals, and this stuff's going to go live pretty soon. You know, next 3 months.
That's good to hear. I think there's always this, it's sort of interesting with the sort of the blockchain game sort of scene, that there's, on one level, there's a whole bunch of stuff that you know, it's sort of secret that the sort of companies are working on, they're not talking about. And then there's this other sort of stuff that is sort of vaguely known, but it takes time to build games. So there's this sort of like floating period of time. You know, and it strikes me, you know, wherever you are, every 6 months has the most exciting blockchain game. So I think, you know, as much as I love Splinterlands, you know, there's a whole, the sort of the next level is sort of always coming. And I think that's really the fascinating side of things. If you can sort of decouple yourself from the sort of speculative successes or woes of the market, which I think we probably spend much too much time on. I don't know. How do you find it? Because I guess, you know, Splinterlands, you've got a good community there. People have been playing it for a while. That, you know, do you find they're less bothered about the sort of the underlying price of the assets, or is that still sort of the main concern of every blockchain game community?
You know, I see a lot. It's a mix, because there's not, one of the things that's so beautiful about blockchain and what's annoying as hell about blockchain is that everybody comes with a different motive, you know, and everybody's coming from different perspectives. You know, we have a bigger, like, regular gamer player base than most of these projects do. A lot of them seem like they're DeFi, degen, speculating on coins, whereas we have a lot more players that are, like, engaged every day and play 25 matches and grind it out and try to get on top of leaderboards and figure out what the best deals are for what players go well together. And so some are here for the playing. Lots of people are also expecting to earn. So, you know, like, you could argue that Bitcoin's been in a bear market since April of last year. You know, that's a long time to be, you know, chewing sideways. And it's frustrating for the folks that are here, and because it, you know, what happens to Bitcoin also happens to the altcoins, but usually to a more extreme variety. So it's frustrating to watch our coin be down and to see challenges there. But at the same time, like, we keep growing, more people are coming in, people are excited, they like the reward changes, and the game is growing. And then, you know, we still have bots within our game. They're currently recalibrating and trying to figure out how do they participate. And it's my deep hope that they understand in the not too distant future, oh crap, I need more cards. If I want this investment in accounts to pan out, I need more cards that can fight at more levels. And and then, you know, land, I don't want to, like, undersell either. Land is a big deal. So we have 150,000 plots. Each one of those could use up to, you know, one summoner and maybe five monsters. That's 750,000 monsters. Well, those things need, you know, there's levels in our game. So, you know, like, a common card takes 500 cards to level. So now you're talking about, like, 35 million cards or something to go get to, like, max level cards sitting on every single one of these land plots. Like, you know, that's more than what's in circulation. so it's a big deal. So we'll see what all that kind of pans out into. But you know, as land gets out, and, you know, these players want to use their land to harvest resources to the best of their ability, you know, scarcity does amazing things for these projects, and I think they're going to find that the cards themselves are pretty scarce commodities.
And I think more generally, that's actually something that, you know, blockchain games are the first sort of type of games. We've had games that have lasted for a long time, like World of Warcraft lasted, you know, whatever, 10, 12 years, whatever. But what's interesting about blockchain games is, you know, I think Splinterlands probably the longest running one. I mean, Axie is probably about the same, but, you know, getting on for 3 or 4 years. But they sort of change in quite subtle and in some ways quite significant ways as the whole thing builds out, which is, I think, kind of, you know, super, super positive sort of thing, that these things are, you know, maybe blockchain games, the disadvantage is they tend to build out too early. So you sort of start off with something that is sort of, at best, sort of minimum viable product, and at worst, sort of a token, but the successful ones are going to change so much over that period. In fact, they're always changing. The economy is always changing. More assets are coming in, and that's respinning, you know, the old assets, which I think is a sort of fascinating part of how game development is changing, which, you know, we haven't really seen a lot of now. But I mean, certainly, I think, you know, whether it be Splinterlands, we see blockchain games that will last for, you know, 20 years, 100 years, won't we?
Yeah, I mean, as long as, you know, people have anywhere from I didn't look recently, but it's like a quarter of a billion to have $1 billion in the game, right? Like, you know, you have a lot of reasons not to leave it. You have a lot of reasons to stake more, earn more, figure this thing out, because, you know, people have substantial amounts of money parked in the game. So, yeah, I mean, I walked away from Clash of Clans. I walked away from World of Warcraft. I mean, I've logged into Splinterlands every single day of my life for, you know, 4 years.
On that note, we will leave it there. The how blockchain games are totally changing games, and I guess you agree with me, making them better in almost every way, but probably every way, I would say. Maybe that's a debate for another time. We'll leave that one. Thank you very much, Jesse. Yeah. That was great as ever.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate being here, and look forward to coming back a year from now.
No, well, maybe with all this stuff announcing, we'll have to make sure that I'm not quite so tardy in my invitation. So, but thank you very much for coming on. Thanks very much for those who are watching and listening to the podcast, depending on how you are consuming it. Don't forget to subscribe. Every week we are talking to the people who are coming up with these, you know, this reinvention of gaming. And there's a whole range of stuff. I think it's super fascinating. There's lots of different sort of projects, lots of different sort of business models and different ways of approaching this. There's no template, but I think, you know, as I say, this is changing games, and we're seeing fascinating results. So thanks for watching. See you next time.